Well, good morning. How are y'all? Good to see you. Thank you for having me come. I look forward to the whole week. I need your help in this lesson. Please, would you all stand, please, just a moment? Now, this will give opportunity for those of you in the back. Come on down. Come on. We'll wait. Come on. Really. You can go back where we're done. It won't come. Come on, Adam. You can move first. Thank you. Yeah, it's a disadvantage for me to know your history. We'll wait. Come on, some of you others are brave ones. Let's move. That's good. I want to be able to look at you, talk to you this morning. It makes the lesson go at least 20 minutes quicker. Thank you. And I'll be leaving after Wednesday, so you won't have to put up with me after that. Thank you so much. Please have a seat. Oh, that's so much better. If you've never spoken to an audience, you don't know how this feels. If you have, you do. It makes a difference when you sit together and you can look people in the eye. Thank you so much. We look forward to the week. Well, let's ask you this question. Do you know the secret? There we go. Getting the right spot. Do you know the secret? You say, preacher, the secret about what? And there is a secret. Most people don't know this. And I would venture to say even most Christians don't know it. That's why we're going to study it. Do you know the secret? What does it mean to be a Christian? Well, you can answer that question a number of ways. Note this particular ID tag emphasizes what? Can you read it? Believer? Yeah, a believer that Jesus is the Christ. A disciple, a follower of Christ, one who is a learner and a follower. A disciple of Christ is a person who learns for the rest of their life how to follow Christ. But it isn't just a learner, a pupil. It's a pupil or a learner who follows. And a follower, then, who learns. If you will, would you repeat this with me? A disciple is a learner who follows, and a follower who learns. We'll try it again. A disciple is, I know it's brand new to you. You didn't know what I was going to say. A disciple is a learner who follows, and a follower who learns. And that's what you do the rest of your life. You're constantly learning, but learning for what purpose? To follow. To follow. It isn't just an academic, a college, where we come in and we take a little test. Oh, yeah, I know that. But we're looking to follow. And then as we follow, what do we inevitably do? We hit upon something. So what do we do now? How do I approach this? What should I do? Then we're back to learning. And there are different kinds of learning. We learn from reading the scriptures, and we learn through experience. When I'm working with young people, and I do that a lot, I love it. They're my kids. I tell them, and they're probably sick of it now. I said, I have one advantage over you. And really, principally, just one. I'm not smarter, certainly not better looking. But what you have seen once, I have seen 50 times. Why? I'm 71 years of age. Oh, today, I'm 71 years of age. Y'all want to sing happy? No. I'm non-traditional enough without going that far. But that's true. And those of you who are older, use your experience. Use what you have seen to pay it forward, to help the younger people who've only seen it once. So we learn through different ways. But these are traditional ways of defining who a Christian is, a saved person. And they're all correct. But there's one that we often miss. And that is, a Christian is somebody who has contentment. Contentment. And if we are not contented, it's either that we have never thought that this is something you can learn, or maybe we're not Christians, or we're not a mature Christian. That's the purpose of our study this week, is to study and to learn about contentment. Well, do you know the secret? Contentment. Do you know the secret of being content? Well, let's go and look at our passage. Now, I believe that this is the high point of the book of Philippians. It's at the end of the book. So you got to read the whole book, unless you flip to the end and read it. You have to read the whole book in order to hit the high point. So we're going to go to the end of the book and read the high point, and then we're going to go back and show how Paul makes the argument about contentment. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me. Indeed, you were concerned before, but you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having an abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Well, we're going to ask three questions, and then we'll stop. And I need to stop when? 45 after. Okay, we have 35 minutes for us to learn what contentment is and what it's not. All right, three questions. What is contentment? Second question, how do you get it? And why are we discontented? Those three questions to start our lessons with. All right, let's begin. What is it? What is contentment? Are you ready? Who gave me a yeah? Lesson over. Let's just go home. Let's get some bluebell. Y'all got bluebell up here? Well, obviously, it's just a metaphor for something. Now, several years ago on television, Bluebell Ice Cream used this picture of this cow. And what did they say? We have the most contented cows. You remember that? Contented cows. And you saw this cow just chewing and just, you know, just idyllic. Not a care in the world, not moving about very fast, not moving at all except just eating. And I'm afraid that that's a lot of people's understanding of what it means to be content. You got everything you need. You got Bluebell ice cream. You have no worries. So contentment becomes something I will have when? When I get more money. When I get my health back. Watch this one, single folk, if we got any. When I get married. Or some married folk, when I can get unmarried. Or when I can have children. Or when these children get out of the house and I can begin to do the things I, when I retire, when, not now, but later, when circumstances change. That's not the secret of contentment. So let's see what it is. It's not that. It's something more powerful than that. My brethren, if we just relegate and isolate the concept of being content to circumstances, what's the result? You're at the mercy of the circumstances of life. And you know what? God doesn't guarantee earthly circumstances. He just shows us how to deal with them. He shows us how to be content in spite of them. We're in charge then with the power of God. Not circumstances, not the world. I want you to get that concept clearly in our minds. I believe this is why Christians are not contented as they should be. When I'm not contented, why not? Well, something in my life I don't like. Something's not going good. It's not the way I want it. So, let's look at the dictionaries and see how they help us. First of all, in English, it means to be satisfied, contained, as the contented person's desires are bound by what he or she already has. Already has. Not when. You say, well, that's why I can't be contented. I don't have enough yet of something. That's the problem. We're thinking about it in the wrong way. The Greek uses two words for this English word, contented. It's self plus sufficient. Oh, you get the point already, don't you? Being self-sufficient. Of course, for a Christian, it means with the Christ, with the Lord. We're self-sufficient. In other words, self-sufficient, wanting or having need of what? You tell me. What did I say? Everybody together? Nothing. Or, I have enough. Do you have enough? His brother says he does. Well, yeah, I got enough of this, but not enough of this. Now, preacher, are you telling us that we can never want another suit of clothes or another car or another good meal? Or no, I'm not. But if it doesn't happen, it's okay. I have enough. Now, let's look at some quotations. What have some wise men and women said about this? Well, let's see. It isn't what you have or who you are or where you are or what you're doing that makes you happy or unhappy. It is what you think about it. A lot of truth in that. It's getting to what we're doing in this lesson further. Socrates, he who is not contented with what he has, would not be contented with what he would like to have. Do you believe that? I tell you, if you believe that, you're in the minority. Maybe even the minority of our brethren. Maybe even in the minority of this local church. Further, we are not rich by what we possess, but by what we can do without. Ooh. Do you feel good when you discipline yourself? No, I can live without that. No, I won't put that on the credit card. I can live. You know what credit cards are for? Other than convenience? They're for buying stuff that you can't afford right now. We need to watch that. Use them for convenience. Not for buying stuff you can't pay for. right now. Do without. Wealth consists not in having great possessions, but in having few wants. John, you're hurting our economy. We're a consumer. We're a consumer culture. We depend on people buying stuff. Byron wants these people who want these million-dollar homes. True contentment is being... I love this by Chesterton. If you don't know G.K. Chesterton, get to know him. He's been long dead, but he was a Roman Catholic. But he was a very wise man and a good Bible scholar. True contentment is a thing as active as agriculture. Oh, I love that metaphor. You can grow it. It is the power of getting out of any situation, all that there is in it. It is arduous and it is rare. What is that telling you? You will never get all that is in you. The power, the qualities, and the abilities that God has given you. Unless you learn to be content. In other words, not discontented harms us. It retards us. It puts obstacles in our way to really be all that we can be and to do all that we can do. And then I love this one. Whatever we are waiting for, what are you waiting for? For peace of mind, contentment, grace, the inner awareness of simple abundance. It will surely come to us, but only when we are ready to receive it with an open and grateful heart. Not just the stepping stone to something else. I want more. Likely, you have already experienced. I see several people in the audience who are my age. Many of you are younger. Now that you're making two times what you used to make, are you happy? You're more content? How's that working out for you? Are you finding if you just get another raise or another car or another house or another circumstance or another church, you find it, oh boy, I finally found it. How's that working out? Hasn't your life experience shown what these men and women say is true? How does that work? All right. So how do you get it? If that's what it is, if it's the ability to say, I have enough, how do you get it? Well, Paul's credentials. He's the one who's going to tell us. Does he have any appropriate credentials to convince us that he knows what he's talking about, that he has learned the secret to be content in whatever circumstances he has? Well, yeah, Paul, he had a cushy life. He had everything. He had money. He had position. Really? You haven't read about Paul? He tells us a little bit. This is a synopsis. Some of the things that he experienced. Are they servants of Christ? He's talking about these false apostles who were claiming to be somebody in the Corinthian church. If they were opposing and denigrating Paul. So Paul says, well, let me give you my credentials. Let me give you my creds. Are they servants of Christ? I speak as if insane. I'd rather not be talking this way. It's almost like a crazy man. I'm a servant, more so, in far more labors, in far more imprisonments, beaten times without number, often in danger of death. 5 times I've received from the Jews 39 lashes. Somebody who does math real quick, what's 5 from 39? How much? 195 lashes. Wow. If he's content. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I spent in the deep. I have been on frequent journeys and dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea, dangers among false brethren. I have been in labor and hardship through many sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. Contented? Apart from such external things, there is the daily pressure on me of concern for all the churches. And not only that, spiritually I've been concerned, and this is the word worry, in a good sense. Worry often is described as being sinful. Here it's not. I've been concerned for the churches, the daily pressure on me of concern for all the churches. Who is weak without my being weak? Who is led into sin without my intense concern? I mean, Paul wasn't living an isolated life where he didn't connect with people and therefore share in their sorrows and their tears. Contented? Would you want to live this kind of life? If I have to boast, I will boast of what pertains to my weaknesses, these that he has named. This was a great life because he learned the secret of no matter what the circumstances are, I am contained within. I can smile. I have something that surpasses and rises above these circumstances that are unpleasant. What power! Those are his creds. This gives him the insight via the Holy Spirit to write it accurately as to how to be content. So let's look at our passage. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly, he writes to the Philippians, from prison, a Roman prison, either the Caesarean imprisonment or the Roman imprisonment. And I'm kind of split on that. I read one commentary and I agree with them. But it doesn't matter for us. He was in prison. But I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last you have revived your concern for me. And indeed, you were concerned before, but you lacked opportunity. He's not complaining. He said, well, it's about time y'all took care of me. Preachers, there are at least three of us in the audience, me and two others, and maybe some others. Preaching is a privilege. It's a privilege to have people provide you the material means to do what you do for nothing. Do you realize that Tim would preach here for nothing? Sorry, I had to reveal that much. If they cut your salary, well. But we would. I get to do what I would do for nothing. I get to do the thing that pleases me the most, not just preaching, but working in the Word and helping other people to understand it. He isn't complaining. He said, you lacked opportunity, but now that you've got it, you've sent a gift to me. But you lacked opportunity. Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. Whatever circumstances. In other words, I always am contented. He doesn't depend on circumstances. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity in any and every circumstance. I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having an abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. Learn the secret. I want you to know about something about this word. It's not the normal word for learned in the Scriptures. It's a special word. It's only used one time in the Scriptures here. And it means learned by experience or initiation. It was borrowed from the mystery cults who had initiatory rites that they only gave to those who were members. Those on the outside, they weren't initiated into the secret. That's what we have in Christ. And we get it through experience. Now, if that's so, and I believe it is, look what that does for us. Every challenge, every difficulty, every situation that's hard is an opportunity to learn this secret. It's a whole new way of looking at things. God hasn't abandoned me. God, yes, has allowed it. It may not be in the sense that it may be difficult, even to yield to it may be sinful, but it's an opportunity to learn the secret by experience. I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. Now, let's don't take this statement out of context. Well, I can jump tall buildings in a single bound. I can be a billionaire. I can win the Super Bowl. I can do through Christ. I can. Christ has something more important to teach us than all those things. I can do all things needed to be contented. I can do all things that Christ wants me to be and to do. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Him who strengthens me. So in other words, this difficulty, whatever it is in your life, it's an opportunity for me to learn how strong Christ is in me. An opportunity to learn. Our God is not unconcerned with our circumstances here, but He wants us to learn how to rise above them and to conquer them through Christ. So, how do you get it? How do you get it? Well, first of all, you have to want it. You have to want it. You say, preacher, I just want a raise. I just want to be better looking. I want to lose 50 pounds. Well, okay. But to the degree that you're discontented, if you don't lose the pounds, you don't get the raise, you don't get what you want, you're going to be on the roller coaster. You know what you'll discover? You get the raise. What happens? Want another one. I wasn't always making my living preaching. I was in the business world for 7.5 years. First as an accountant with a CPA firm, and then later I ran a garbage hauling company. My mother did not relish the idea of telling her friends what her son was doing. She said, John, when you introduce yourself, can you just see if you can eschew the phrase that you're in the garbage hauling business? I said, well, okay, mother, I'm in the solid waste removal business. Well, that sounds better. That's not what she aspired for her son. But it was honorable work, and I learned a lot. Here's one thing I learned about managing men who are workers and women. Those who are working for the money only, if you gave them more money, it didn't improve their work. It just convinced them they were underpaid to begin with. And those who are working to do a good job were really grateful for the raise.
Does God say work is only for working for God?
Yes. You have to want it. You have to learn it. Learn it. And it's hard. It is hard. And it will require learning it through experiences. Several of my friends have very difficult circumstances with their children. And I'm close enough with, I'm thinking of one family. They have seven children. The seventh children is a little girl, and she has Down syndrome. That was my reaction. This brother went, ooh. When I went to their congregation for a meeting, they said, John, would you stay with us? I said, I'd love to. And so they did. Oh, they swapped beds around. I got the mother and father's bed, Tony and Terry. I said, well, why don't you let me sleep with the boys? Oh, no, John. You know, they have three boys and now four girls, with the littlest one. And the little Down syndrome girl had not, she was no more than a year, probably not quite a year. And so we were talking, and I'm close to them, and so we can be somewhat direct, knowing that I love them. And I said to the mother, I said, Terry, how are you dealing with the fact that Madeline is Down syndrome? And she couldn't speak. Tony said, she's not, John. The tears were in her eyes. You see, she had started having children late, and she felt like it was kind of her fault because this child came, you know, much later in her life, and maybe she just should have been more careful of whatever. It was her fault. And I said, have you ever thought that God wanted this child in your family? I can't think of another family that will give the love and the care to a child, not only by you and Tony, but by your six other kids. They're marvelous. And she said, no, John, I hadn't thought of that. Obviously, I don't know all the reasons God allows what he allows. But somebody has to show us the way. And if you have a difficulty, show the rest of us how to deal with it, how to bring good from it. I saw a picture. She's, the little girl now has got to be 5, 4 or 5, maybe 6. And I saw a picture of her and her mother. And they both had on the same patterned dress, you know. They were striped. They looked like two bumblebees, you know, with those real, you know, but so cute. And you ought to see the way the other children care for her. Those parents, I would think that the fear of any parent or couple who have special needs children worry about, well, what happens to them when we're gone? Guess what? We got six other people that love her. They'll care for her. And it's a blessing. Now, sometimes we just don't want that blessing, do we? We want to be able to watch our TV programs and manage our life the way we want it. But we don't know what's best for us. God does. So here we're going to learn how to be contented. You learn it. You learn it from those who have it, like Paul. There are other people in this, there are others in among you that they show the way as to how to deal with these things. And they come into all of our lives. You learn it by experience or initiation. You don't read the book. Okay, I got that. Oh, let's see. 2005. It's now 2014. Was that 8 years ago? And 7 years before that, so 15 years ago, I had something happen in my life that I dreaded all my adult life. You know what it was? My parents finally got old and their bodies failed to the point that somebody had to take care of them. Guess who that was? Now, my other three siblings were very good at helping in various ways, but somebody had to take the point. Somebody had to make the decision. Somebody had to find out this and this and this and this and this and this. Guess who that was? It was me. And I resented it. I'm confessing my sin. I'm a preacher, man. I travel. I don't have time for this. I'm doing the work of the Lord. And then the Lord took me. You see, you know what got me through that? I loved my parents. And I could not stand the thought of them not being cared for. So I had to learn. I had to learn to do things I never knew I could do. Almost all of you, if you have children, you have an advantage over me. I've never had any children. I've never learned all that care, bodily functions and all, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You get the picture without being too graphic. Ooh. You know what? Arguably, the best 7 years of my life. Why? I found the power of Christ to bring forth good. I became so close to my parents. I always knew they loved me, and I always knew in a way that they knew that I loved them. But now, I know they know that I love them. Don't miss that. All of us are going to, if you haven't already, you're going to get an opportunity to care for your aged parents. Don't back away from it. Seize it. Step forward. Let me do that. I want to be a part. Don't run from it. It's God's gift to you. You're going to learn things you never thought you knew. or that you never knew that you didn't know. It's a wonderful opportunity. It's by experience. I was initiated. Which am I? Thermometer? What does the thermometer do? It takes your temperature right now. Often I encounter people, that's what they're doing. They're going through life, taking their temperature. Am I happy? Am I happy? If you have to ask if you're happy, you're not. No, not a thermometer. Let's be a thermostat. Let's set the temperature. I went into the hotel room, very nice, by the way, thank you. Went in there, it was set on 71. I rolled it down to 70. Set it. I like it cool. I don't know how on earth God led me and kept me in Southeast Texas. I mean, it's as hot there as it got to be any place in the world. But I set it. Set your spiritual thermostat to contentment. And look what it does. It not only regulates you, it regulates everybody in your sphere. Do you like to go within the realm and the sphere of people who are not contented, always complaining, arguing, griping, grousing, whatever the words are? No. Throwing these pity parties for ourselves because we're in this particular difficulty. You know the problem with a pity party? You're the only person who wants to come to it. And over time, you're the only one who will attend your own pity party. So let's set our thermostat. So why are we discontented? We do not understand that contentment is a choice. We don't understand that. It's a choice that we can make by God's power. Further, Christ is not in us or has not matured in us. And again, that's a choice that we can make. Either to invite Christ into our heart, to rule it as our king, or to mature more. To be initiated into the secret. Further, Christ is not circumstances. We concentrate on circumstances rather than character, who we are. Further, failure to see the power of Christ. We have not been willing to be initiated into the secret of contentment. That's why we're discontented. It's not God's will. Why? You ready? Are you really ready? Let's find out. It does. God is so powerful that he brings forth good things from bad things. You believe that? Look at the cross. Worst thing that the devil ever did. Best thing that's ever happened to us. How? By the power of God. Let's close by singing this song. Y'all know this song, My Only Hope? I don't know if it's in any of your books, but I put it up on the screen. Here we go. An F. Richard, get me close.
Domi, my only hope is you, Jesus, my only hope is you. From early in the morning till late at night, my only hope is you. My only peace is you, Jesus. My only peace is you. From early in the morning till late at night, my only peace is you. My only joy is you, Jesus. My only joy is you. From early in the morning till late at night, my only joy is you. All that I need, all that I need is you, Jesus. All that I need is you. From early till late at night, all that I need is you.
Am I a thermometer or a thermostat? Is there contained within me a power that sets my spiritual temperature to contentment? Am I willing to be initiated into the secret of contentment? Is Jesus Christ in me and maturing? How does this process work? Whatever we are waiting for, peace of mind, contentment, grace, the inner awareness of simple abundance, it will surely come to us, but only when we are ready to receive it with an open and grateful heart. Thank you.